Like to call to session the March 5th, 2013 session of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We are in session. Again, we have several bills today. And first up is Senate Bill 348. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 348. Beth, if you could please give us a review of that bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 348 would authorize commodity commissions to operate using a fiscal year that begins on January 1 and ends December 31. There is a dash one amendment in front of you that would add an emergency clause to the bill, and there is a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning, Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. And thank you very much for hearing Senate Bill 348. I will be very brief. I have submitted written testimony to OVIS. It should be in your packets or on your computer, one or the other. I will very speak, that explains the need for the bill. I will very briefly speak to the amendment. We request the dash one amendment, which is an emergency clause. It was decided that after this bill moved through the Senate so quickly and got to the House Committee that if we put an emergency clause on the bill, they'd be able to implement it in this year so that by and write rules, and by July 1st, they would be able to start this new process and go from a fiscal year to a calendar year and save a year of this confusing budgeting for the Dairy Farmers Dairy Products Commission. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions any of the committee, you or the committee might have. I urge a passage of the bill. It's a very simple bill and has no opposition that I'm aware of.
And the clock is ticking. This could be the fastest bill to rocket out of here so far this session.
Let's hope so, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Mr. Beyer? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify this morning on Senate Bill 348? Not seeing any. Last and final call. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 348, and I'm going to open a work session momentarily. That's okay. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 348. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Dash ones.
I move that we adopt the dash one amendments on this bill, Senate Bill 348, the dated 2/26/13.
Vice Chair Esquivel moves adoption of the dash one amendments dated February 26, 2013 to Senate Bill 348. Discussion on his motion. Not seeing any. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Representative Esquivel?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 348 as amended to the House with the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Esquivel moves Senate Bill 348 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar. Discussion on that motion. Seeing none, is there any objection? The motion passes. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 348 and shuffle some papers here momentarily. Next, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2032. Excuse me, a work session on House Bill 2032. Open a work session. Beth, could you remind us what that bill's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard this bill on February 21st. It requires payments for off-site compensatory mitigation to the Oregon Removal Fill Fund to be sufficient to specify to cover costs and expenses, which may vary depending on the region of the state. There are no amendments, minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact. There is currently a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, but after discussion with legislative fiscal. It doesn't seem like that is warranted.
All right, very good. Thank you. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2032 to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Do we have a referral to Ways and Means?
We do currently have one, so the recommendation would be to remove the subsequent referral.
Okay. But we want to send it to Ways and Means and let them remove it, or what's the deal?
No, we send it to the floor.
Okay, so we send it to the floor, and then we also take away the subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. Is that to be rescinded? Is that what we're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, very good. Vice Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 2032 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion on that motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Anyone like to carry that bill?
Anyone?
Anyone want to carry that bill?
I will.
Vice Chair Esquivel will carry the bill. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Esquivel. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2032. And we're going to do a shuffle here.
I shall open a public hearing on House Bill 2396. I don't have a list, so I assume that Representative Witt is up.
He's on the move.
He's on the move here, folks.
Careful, Representative Witt.
Thank you.
This could be good. Glasses on.
And let's make sure, folks, that we have some very, very tough questions for the chair. Don't let him off the hook.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt, state representative from House District 31, appearing before you this morning in support of House Bill 2396. This is a bill that provides protections for large woody debris via the Department of State Lands fill and removal process. While the bill establishes protections for downed wood that captures gravel or provides stream protection or fish habitat protection, I believe it also provides opportunities to do the right things for fish, to further recover those species that are threatened and endangered, and to keep those species that are not in jeopardy precisely so, and off of any threatened and endangered species list. By keeping the T&E fish stocks to a minimum, we possess infinitely more opportunities to manage fish ourselves rather than through the courts. And by managing fish the Oregon way, we will continue to enjoy the multitude of economic and social opportunities that would otherwise be lost to outside recovery programs. I would like to emphasize that the bill provides exemptions for those instances where large woody debris threatens livestock, life, property, or transportation. There are also -3 amendments to the bills, which will be discussed by witnesses that follow me, and I urge the committee's favorable action on the bill. Thank you very much, and we'd be happy to take questions.
Any questions?
Oh, come on, guys, gals. Don't let them off.
Is this measure limited to any size of stream?
Chair Esquivel, Representative Reardon, it is there's no limitation on size of the streams.
Okay.
Representative Unger.
Representative Witt, I am kind of curious about how this would actually work. So can you maybe walk through, let's say a tree falls in the stream.
Okay.
How would it, if someone needed to take the tree out for one reason or another, what would this bill do to that? Normally, you just go take the tree out. So how would it change?
Okay. It would change in that whether the tree falls in or the large wood is actually placed there as part of a restoration project. Section 4 of the bill provides that, that wood would be protected and could not be cut up for firewood or removed, unless under Section 4 of the bill on page 5, it threatens livestock, life, property, or transportation. In those instances, the bill provides, and the Dash 3 amendments will further clarify that the removal of that wood is a process that is okay, and that provisions of ORS 96.600-905 do not apply, that a person could simply move that that problem wood.
But if the kind of quick follow-up, but if there wasn't if it didn't fall into one of those categories, but
yes,
someone still wanted to remove the debris, then they'd have to go through
Have to go through the permitting, DSL's permitting process.
And that process already exists.
That process already exists for the removal of material, which is defined in statute as gravel, sand, silt, and other inorganic substances. So to that language is added large woody debris.
So from the department's perspective, they already have this process, and hopefully someone will testify about how that works a little bit later.
That process is already in place, yes.
Does this mean that I lose more hooks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Representative Krieger.
I was trying to understand. The tree falls in the stream as a result of the bank caving or whatever. Often, if you're talking about the smaller streams, it can divert the entire flow of water, start cutting into the bank and taking pastures out. What provisions are in there? There used to be a provision under Division of State Lands that if it was doing that, it was an emergency and you could just get it out and then get a hold of Division of State Lands. If we have to wait for the bureaucracy of that agency, it could be laying there as a small tree and turn into old growth before you got through the process. So tell me how that would happen.
Well, the bill does not alter any other provisions that DSL already has in place. What it does say is, you know, we're providing protections for this large wood that collects gravel or provides protection for stream banks or fish habitat. And in the instances where it threatens property or life, that folks are okay to move forward without the formal permitting process to remove that wood.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair, I want to make sure we have that as a, you know, legislative question, the intent of the bill. And I imagine when the agency gets up here, we can make sure that they confirm the understanding the same as you've explained it to us to be fine.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
We'll call up. Now, you're for the next one, Representative. Bob Olson, Rich Angstead, and Tom Wolf.
Good morning.
My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. I represent all the construction materials folks in the state of Oregon, the asphalt, concrete guys, aggregate guys. We've been involved in this particular debate for probably about 10 years on how to handle large woody debris in the rivers. And there's no question from a fish perspective that the diversity that's added back to the river by keeping these large pieces of wood in increase sinuosity of the river, basically braiding and channeling is the new word, they call it sinuosity, and helps improve salmon habitat all over. The issue that brought us into the discussion is, as you know, we're a pretty heavily regulated interest and have to get permits all over the state on just about every topic you can imagine. And what we did in this particular bill and the history of this is has not been one of support because of the issue of the numbers of permits. But we're changing our position today after some hard work on getting amendments down that address many of the concerns that were just discussed and are now going to be in a supportive position for this particular bill. And it took quite a bit of work, but let me walk through what the bill will do and get us focused on at least the policy of how we protect large woody debris and how we do it in a way that's streamlined and appropriate for landowners that have to manage material that may land in the rivers on their property. This bill for us really applies mostly to the coast. So it's going to apply to Representative Krieger's district, Representative Boone's district, where we do bar scalping. And the example for us is a large piece of wood comes down the river and may land on one of our bars. And we need to get that off that we're scalping for sand and gravel resources because it starts to, as this large wood sits there on the bar, it starts eroding around it and it creates a fish capture issue. In our current permits right now, DSL allows us to take them off because we don't want to capture the smolts coming down in these depressions on these commercial gravel bars. So what was important to us is to make sure that the process worked. So what we did is we sat down and worked on the language of the bill and the exceptions to it. The exceptions are very important. As we know, and what we see a lot with large wood, it'll accumulate on bridge structures and culverts and various things like that, right? And they're allowed, landowners are allowed to come in and remove those the large wood when it looks like it's going to damage, you know, property or affect transportation. Folks that are fishing that are taking their drift boats down the river and need to get around a chunk of wood, and trust me, I'm a drift boater, and if there's a log across the river, it can be pretty dangerous in a drift boat. A lot of the drift boaters will come in and cut out the piece so it, transportation can happen. The bill also allows if there's going to be any risk to animals that the material can be taken out. But for us, it was all about having to get other permits. And what we worked out in this is that DSL will be including large woody debris as a material in the definition in their statutes. It will be already part of the existing permit. The permit condition is already part of the permit conditions that we already have. So we have to get the gist of it is we don't have to get another permit. It won't result for us for another permit. But the folks that want to go out and remove large woody debris for, you know, wood cutting and firewood and things of that nature, and that don't fall into these other persons, property, and transportation exceptions, they'll have to get one. And it really is, in my mind, as I think about this, it's really designed to try to protect some of the wood that we're actually putting back in the river right now. That seems to be disappearing by our woodcutting community. And those people are going to have to get permits if they want to go out and cut wood out of the river systems for wood. But from a landowner's perspective, I think that we've taken care of the issues that we're concerned with. So with that, we've gone through three amendment processes, and we're now on the dash four amendments. The dash four amendments, or dash three amendments, the dash three amendments clarify the language in the exceptions and makes it consistent with the way it's supposed to be in law. Accomplishes the goal that I just talked about, that you know, for us, it we don't have to get another permit for our kind of activity. And also the last thing it does is, instead of having to run back to the legislature to clear up the exceptions, it allows the department to do rulemaking if issues come up that we haven't thought about, because we are going into some uncharted territory here. So they can handle some of this by rule within the agency itself. With all of that said, from at least this side of the landowner community, it's resolved our issues. We've gone from a very strong no onto this to a supportive yes, and it accomplishes streamlining, accomplishes fish protection, and it deals with the exceptions that we all need to do to manage our property in an appropriate way. So this is now a good bill. I encourage you guys to pass this bill and move it on to the floor.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Angstrom. And I just want to note that I know that you have spent more time than any other single individual in crafting House Bill 2396 and getting it to a point where hopefully it works for everyone. And I greatly appreciate all of your efforts. Thank you. Tom.
Chair Witt, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, and Trout Unlimited supports House Bill 2396, and it's rare but always delightful to be up testifying and be on the same side of the bill with Mr. Angstrom. It doesn't happen very often, but like I said, it's great when it does. We support it in its present. We haven't seen Dash 3, but I'm sure we'll be supportive of it. There's a book out called King of Fish. It talks about salmon both in Europe and the coast and out here, and it talks in some of the chapters it talks about what woody debris used to really mean. And when Lewis and Clark and the early settlers showed up, rivers, there was so much woody debris that was flowing into the streams that they actually created islands that grew trees and had fish and stuff. And we can never go back to that, but and I'm not saying that we should. We're now a state of millions, whereas back in those days there was just a few thousand people in Oregon. So we can never go back to that. But woody debris provides habitat for fish. It provides food for mackerel and birds to feed in. It is especially on coastal streams when there's high winter flows. It gives the coho and chinook and steelhead smolts a place to hide, and it's very necessary. And what's good about this bill is it addresses the fact of leaving large woody debris in the stream, but also deals with the many challenges that landowners have and that other industries have. And I understand those challenges. And the last thing we would ever want to do is jeopardize the property of farmers and landowners, because you know their needs are very important. But we feel this bill, and Dash 3 seems to bring about, this will deal with that and give a chance for large woody debris to be left in the streams and provide the habitat for fish that are so desperately needed. And I just want to close with one story. In the Metolius River, years ago, there used to be lots of large woody debris, and the landowners there thought it was making the stream too cluttered, so they got the Forest Service to remove that large woody debris from the stream, and it became what some of my members refer to as the most beautiful river in Oregon not to catch fish in. And it's an extremely beautiful spring creek, and for years, Trout Unlimited, we do a in October, we do a fall fish restoration program where we work on streams around that area. It varies from years to years, but we always camp at a campground on the Metolius at Camp Sherman. And It's a beautiful campground. You're right there in the river, but if you go out and pound the river with a fly rod, you won't catch any fish, or at least you didn't for a long time. And then the Forest Service a few years ago started putting large woody debris back in the stream, and lo and behold, there were trout to be caught. And not only that, kokanee salmon came up, and it developed spawning area, and you could go out in the fall now and see up to 50 to 60 kokanee salmon, landlocked sockeye, spawning right there in the campground. So it's amazing to see the change that large woody debris has made in that stream, and it will be amazing to see what the change if we can start getting large woody debris left in many streams, what that will mean for wild salmon. Because like I've said many times before, our goal, Trout Unlimited's goal, is to recover wild salmon to a point where they can be harvested by people, where they can provide income for local communities, and help the rural communities in particular have jobs. So we think this is a great bill. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Bob Olson with Northwest Steelheaders. You have my brief statement before you, and I can't add a lot to what has already been said here this morning, but I did want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Angstrom for continuing to work on this issue that has been around for a long time and finally make some good progress on it. It's very much appreciated. In my lifetime, we used to pay people to remove the logs. Now we pay people to put them back in for habitat, and some of these projects are very expensive, and it's just terrible waste when they are abused or otherwise removed by people that don't understand the full implications of what they're doing. So although this bill has significant exemptions in it for the reasons we've already discussed, it is a very big step forward in terms of the effective regulation, and I hope that all of us that have been working on this can continue to find ways to maybe responsibly narrow this in the future, but it will continue. We'll take more work and probably for a different day.
Thank you very, very much. Rich, I know you had a couple of things.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of questions, one about the size of the stream and any size of the stream. I would just point out that it has to meet the definition of waters of the state. It wouldn't be every stream, intermittent streams and things like that. This is all about waters of the state that DSL regulates. That's one important point to note, that intermittent streams and things that are not regulated would not be covered under this. The second point was for legislative history purposes. If the way the exemptions work, if a large piece of wood lands on a bank and redirects a stream to the opposite bank and it starts eroding, that piece of wood could be removed, and is expected in the amendments that it would be removed so the landowner wouldn't have property loss. So I think those are important. That the real thing here is trying to manage where we can keep large woody debris in the river systems where they can naturalize the river, but acknowledging that so much of the lower portions of the river systems are fairly well developed, and we need those exceptions to protect property interests and things of that nature. So the way this bill works is a really nice balance between those two competing interests. So I wanted to point that out because I want the legislative history clear too, that we're allowed to do that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate those clarifications for the record. Representative Krieger.
Rich, I've been reading the dash threes and trying to get it to fit in there. I'm having a little difficulty do it. And normally I'm pretty good at that because we deal with some stuff in judiciary that is really terrible. Can you get this written out like it is, instead of insert and take out and then reinsert what you took out, and yeah, so we can actually read it and get a mental picture of what the change is? And as far as the question of large woody debris, I mean, that's been established for 30 years what we need to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that objects to it. We just got to be careful to make sure we are saying what we want to be said.
Yeah. And Representative Krieger, I will do that with the dash threes that have been worked out. I got them this morning too, and so I haven't been able to pencil it out that way. But we've had enough email traffic with LC and the department on this. We agreed on all the all the issues in context. And these are, most of these changes are going to be small, more compliance type changes, but accomplishes the goals that we've talked about here. But I'll pencil them out and then send Chair Witt, I'll email you a copy of the how it reads written out, these exceptions, and actually probably Beth would be the best person to send them to so she can get them to the committee members.
All right. Additional questions or comments for this panel? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Kurt Melcher and Jim Myron. Gentlemen.
Morning.
Please proceed.
Thanks. Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we did provide written comments that should be coming around to you, and so I'll be brief here. I think I wanted to emphasize that, as was discussed earlier, the presence of large woody debris in our stream ecosystems has been well studied, researched, and very firm conclusions drawn as to the ecological benefits that those structures bring in our particular salmonid streams, but also trout streams. One of the primary limiting factors, for instance, in our coastal systems for coho salmon is overwinter habitat. And overwinter habitat is generally structure and sinuosity, backwater areas where juvenile salmons can get out of flood waters, out of high flow situations. So woody debris is an important component, not only in its the presence of the woody debris itself, but also the associated structures that develop with that large woody debris. And as such, an important part of the Oregon plan for salmon watersheds was looking at and working to improve the stream diversity and, in particular, large woody debris in our systems. Over the last 25 years, Oregon has really led the way in bringing that structure back to our streams. And just by way of example, when I say we, I mean the state collectively, not just the Department of Fish and Wildlife, but also all the watershed councils, associated timber industry, small woodlot owners. It runs the full gamut. But just for the period 2002 through 2012, the department's Western Oregon Streams Restoration Project implemented 517 in-stream projects, which were largely placement of large woody debris. So with that, Mr. Chair, the department certainly recognizes the importance of large woody debris and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Jim.
Thank you, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Myron with the Native Fish Society, and the Native Fish Society also supports the concept of putting large woody debris under the provisions of the fill and removal laws. We think it's important to protect that water, that wood in stream, particularly the wood that's been placed there as part of a watershed recovery project, as you heard before. That's been happening a lot, and it's very expensive, and it's would be foolish to allow that wood to continue to be utilized for firewood instead of for its intended purpose. We do have maybe some questions, I guess, in section 4, the exemption section. The exemption has to be clear so that people understand when they can use the exemption. And the wording direct and demonstrable danger, I'm not sure everybody would understand what that really means. I think what we're going to see under this is people will assume they are covered under the exemption and will remove the wood. And is there a process in place to make sure that doesn't happen, I guess? And as long as you're considering other amendments, and I'm glad to see that OCAPA is on board now, that's an important step in the right direction, but we need to make sure that this exemption process is actually workable at the local level, and we'd be happy to work with the chair and others interested in this bill to see if we can refine that language a little bit better. And the part about passage, the way I read this, if a person is walking down a stream bank and a log is in the way of his walk, he could remove it. And I don't think that's the intent of this bill. So, well, we think it needs a little further tweaking, but I think it can easily be fixed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Krieger.
Well, no, it's a question, but I think sometimes there's unanticipated consequences. Back when I was on OWEB, and Mr. Chair, you were on OWEB for a time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of projects were done 25 years ago where planted willows along streams, put small debris in small creeks. One of those is on Yucca Creek, right where I live, Pea Creek, that comes off my ranch. That was about 5 to 6 feet from the bed of the stream to the road and out into the pastures. Well, that has ingrown with willow and roots now to the point where it's filled up level. As soon as you have any high water, all the water is going out into the fields. I talked to OWEB director about it. We've got another one down on the Piss River doing the same thing. So at some time, Jim, Kurt, you're going to have to meet with Barley for how can we get those streams back into the channel to where the fish can actually utilize them during high water to get in there. Because now that high water isn't actually going down the channel, it's out into the fields, and there's no access for spawning at all. So we didn't see that, but I think it's occurring on those smaller streams only, not the large ones.
Anything further? Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify? Bill, come on forward.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Witt, Vice Chair, Committee for the Record, Bill Clooney, Partners Industrial Council, and longtime Oregon fisherman. I like this bill. It's a long time coming. I'm glad it's finally gained traction. Just a sideline, the director of the Bonneville Power Authority is retiring this year, and in his departing speech, he said the Northwest has spent $13 billion on salmon recovery. Oregon's got a good share of that. Luckily, our governor and our Oregon plan has saved Oregon quite a bit of money, but it also has enhanced our fishery. I'd like to take this one step further. I like reading the bill with removal, woody material. Hopefully, we can adapt this around Sand Island. There's 15,000 pairs of nesting cormorants on that island. It wasn't there a few years ago. It is today. Every scientist who studied this problem now will tell you that over 30 million salmon smolts will be ate this year at that one island. I hope a key part of this is getting that island out of there. We cannot afford to lose that number of fish every year to a bird that 15 years ago wasn't even there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Clooney? Yes, Representative Krieger.
Bill, you kind of triggered something in my mind in that note from Myron just the other day, Jim, about the $57 million investment we make biennium on all the hatchery systems, both federal and state. If you look at that, and we're talking about statewide, it would appear from the Nehalem study, the SLED, some of the stuff that we've done on the Columbia, that half of that $57 million is going into cormorants. You can't do that and make recovery of wild fish a priority because you're never going to get there. And now we're starting to plant less hatchery fish, so guess what the cormorants are going to be eating? They're going to be eating more wild fish. So every time we do something, there's a reaction to what we do, sometimes, again, unintended consequences.
Chair Witt, President Crager, that's a very good point. I will say that we have the healthiest, fattest population of cormorants in the West Coast.
Thank you very much, Bill.
It's good.
All right. Is there anyone else from the in the public that would like to comment on House Bill 2396 today? Not seeing anyone, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2396. Next up, we have House Joint Memorial 3. I'm going to open a public hearing on HJM 3. Welcome, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Chair Witt and committee. And just for the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful upper left coast of our state. And to clarify a question in the last bill, I remember first working on large body debris bills in 1997, so a little bit longer than 10 years.
Wow.
I'm here before you today to ask for your support on House Joint Memorial 3, which is the Seafood Marketing Initiative. And this takes you a little bit further down your travels with the fish and promotes the marketing of U.S. seafood and especially Oregon seafood. And I'm going to put my glasses on. I'm handing out a copy of my testimony, so I won't read it for you. But one of the most significant pieces of information about what this bill could help alleviate or make better is over 80% of the fish seafood products are imported from foreign countries. And it's almost a travesty because, at least I'll speak about Oregon, but this is part of a bigger effort nationwide to do a national seafood marketing, U.S. seafood marketing initiative. But Oregon has many, many, and I don't even want to try to guess how many species of fish, shellfish, seafood, and they're naturally grown by God in the oceans and harvested by our commercial fleets, and in some cases, some seafood is the shellfish, especially the oysters, and help me, Representative Krieger, some of the products developed on your end of the state's coastline. We are just beginning to see our joint ventures formed with the Pacific Rim countries in China and the other parts of Asia, especially for the West Coast. And live fish fisheries down the South Coast are growing in leaps and bounds. We have done a lot of work in correcting significant problems in those industries to help them grow their product. And then as far as fishing, there are challenges in the commercial fishing industry too, but I think that by promoting these products, we're going to do a great help to our communities and economies on the coast. I'm part of a group that's five states, Pacific Fisheries Legislative Task Force, which is the West Coast states and Idaho, because Idaho holds the beginnings of some of the rivers that go down to the coast. And Representative Whitsett is not on that particular one, but the Klamath salmon runs start in her district or nearby. So one of the things that we could fund it from several different venues, but one of the things we could fund it from, and I did a little bit of research on this from the five other states and what they're doing, is if there's a spill, an oil spill, or something like that, a toxic whatever, part of that cleanup money could be utilized to help this fund promoting. One of the greatest things that we see in our fisheries is that when we buy a fish that's Oregon caught, we know it's a fresh fish. We know it's a good fish. I brought a copy of the paper USA Today from last week, and I think you might have seen some of this, but the fake fish that has come up in the market, in the sushi market and some of the fish markets around, not so much in Oregon, but around the country. And when someone thinks they're buying a certain fish, it turns out when they did the DNA test, it was something else. So this could also help alleviate some of that by focusing on our real fish. So I would ask that your support for this. This is a joint memorial to Congress. The other four states in the PFTLC are asking their state legislators to consider a similar legislation, and I think it'd be a good thing for our economy. And, you know, right from fish in the ocean all the way up to the Columbia River Chinook that we are, you know, so prized fisheries for us. A little bit foggy this morning. I haven't had quite enough coffee, and that's probably a good thing that I'm no longer on the committee. So I'll be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Boone. Representative Krieger.
Don't.
She was afraid. I was going to say, it doesn't take coffee to fix it.
Brief question.
Second part is,
no Cormorant questions now.
I agree with where we're trying to go and promoting our products, which are some of the best in the world. The committee could have been to probably convince more if she had brought some samples.
Oh,
smoke.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Well.
That's always convincing, yes.
As a good Swede, I try to eat salmon every day.
Okay. Anyone else? Representative Boone, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else signed up?
Yeah.
We don't have anyone else signed up. Anyone else from the public wish to comment on the House Joint Memorial 3 this morning? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 3 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 3. Committee members, there are no amendments and no fiscal or revenue impacts on this memorial. Recognize Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move HJM 3 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Esquivel moves House Joint Memorial 3 to the House floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing none, the motion passes and so ordered. Thank you very much. Representative Boone, would you like to carry this memorial?
I would be honored.
Thank you very much.
Maybe Representative Boone will bring samples to the floor.
After it passes. We're looking forward to that, Representative Boone.
Well, I will bring my own.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Joint Memorial 3. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2233 and abandoned vessels. Beth, would you recap that for us, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2233 is the bill you heard on February 14th that modifies laws governing the seizure of abandoned vessels. There is a Dash 2 amendment in front of you. The Dash 2 would fill in the blank that's in the bill right now that assigns a value to certain vessels at $500. It also adds a reference to a statutory definition of ship in one statute. I believe Rep. Krieger brought up the question of whether or not that was necessary, and Ledge Council agreed that it was. It also adds clarification to the definition of threatened spill or release. There is no revenue impact, and a minimal expenditure impact with the Dash 2 amendment.
Thank you very much. Let's see here. Before we take a motion, Representative Krieger, have you had an issue that you wanted addressed by the Dash 2s, and have you had a chance to review that?
I haven't gone through it, no, but I'm confident that there wasn't anything in that bill that was not either fixable or
okay.
The way that it's applied by the Marine Board and the deputies and that type of thing, I don't have a problem with it.
Okay, great. Very good. recognize Vice Chair Escarill.
Yeah, Chair Witt, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 2-25-13 to House Bill 2233.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Esquivel moves adoption of the Dash 2 amendments dated February 25th, 2013 for House Bill 2233. Discussion on his motion. Seeing none, is there any objection to the adoption of the Dash 2s? Again, seeing none, hearing none. They stand adopted. Vice Chair Esquivel?
Yeah, Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2233 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 2233 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Whitford. Aye. Representative Krieger. Aye. Representative Lamb. Excused. Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the majority vote, the motion passes.
Should we not have acknowledged that Vice Chair McKinnon is gone and excused?
McKeown.
Sorry, Vice Chair McKeown.
Thank you very much. Okay. For the record, Vice Chair McKeown is recognized as excused.
That's my one time. Next time she's going to get me for mispronouncing her name.
All right. Any volunteers to carry House Bill 2233? I'll take that bill myself. Thank you very much. And committee members, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2232. Anything for the good of the order?
Sure.
I'm not seeing anything. Beth, can you tell us about coming events?
Committee members, on Thursday, March 7th, there are four public hearings and possible work sessions scheduled. The first is House Bill 2027, which is a bill that, if you'll recall, the Landowner Preference Program and the Southwest Damage Program was in need of a vehicle to move those concepts forward, and 2027 is the vehicle, so there'll be some Dash 2 or 3 amendments. I think there are threes on that bill. House Bill 2697 is the fish carcass bill that was carried forward from last week. House Bill 3086 is a bill that addresses a core area habitat of sage grouse. 3262 is a crab pot removal bill. And then there are three work sessions. 2252 is the Fish and Wildlife Multi-Year License Bill. 2249 is the Willamette River Basin Bonneville Power Administration Stewardship Fund Bill. And 2649 is the Farm to School Funding Bill.
With all of those bills, including the fish carcass bill, the audience is going to want to get here early and to get a seat.
Oh, yeah.
So with that, the committee stands adjourned. Thank you very much.